Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place I belong.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is December 6th, and what you're going to hear is the final meetup from the School Sucks Across America tour in Richmond, Virginia. Just one podcast remains after this one in this expansive series that I think between podcasts and bonus shows totals 50 episodes. So huge thanks to Larry before we get started for putting this event together and providing an awesome venue. I can't wait till you all get to see some footage of it in the upcoming School Sucks documentary. I thought this was a great group of guys with some really diverse and interesting backgrounds. And I really appreciated how connected this conversation was. A lot of us were strangers, but once I laid out what I was looking for, the questions I wanted to ask, people seemed really comfortable sharing. And I was certainly very appreciative of that. I'm really happy with how this turned out. Just a brief announcement here before we get started. If you are a supporter of the School Sucks show, either through the AV Club or Patreon, first of all, I want to thank the hell out of you. I'm so grateful. But I'm going to be pitching some ideas, some guest suggestions, some topic suggestions in that group. It's called Friends of the SSP. I'm hoping this is going to be a dynamic year. And if you want to fast track some input right to my brain, that would be the place to do it. I'm going to be asking some questions there in the coming weeks and months, and if you're finding this show valuable, I would in turn value your input. So if you're on Facebook, please search the Friends of the SSP group and request membership, and I'll approve you. So that's it. This runs a little long, so let's get right to it. This is the Richmond meetup from Day 38 of School Sucks Across America. Thank you for listening, and take care.
I hear her voice in the morning hour. She calls me. The radio reminds me of my home far away. Driving down the road, I get a feeling that I should have been home yesterday. Yesterday.
The beginning might be I pick up the mic and I say, Cal, who is the Richmond vampire?
There's seven hills here in Richmond. And so a lot of there's marketing for like seven hills of Richmond. One of the hills is called Church Hill. About 100 years ago, people wanted to put a train to go right through it or around it. They figured out that it's more costly to go around the hill, so they decided to go through it. And so they're digging the tunnel from both sides to go through that hill. And eventually the Depression hit. Right, World War One, you know, and all of a sudden people were out of jobs, and so they couldn't finish the job of digging that tunnel. So about 20 years pass, and finally they're coming back to the same tunnel. They're realizing let's finish this once and for all. And as they're going through the tunnel, and people are digging stuff out, and people are working, and there's a train there to kind of pull the debris out. There was all of a sudden the lights turn out. There was a lot of screams. There was a fire. There was a cave-in at Church Hill. And people were stuck inside the tunnel. And everybody out there were in the community were rushing to dig out the rubble out because people are screaming. It was mortifying. And as soon as they dug it out and they went in, they found just like mutilated dead bodies all over the place. And they found as the closer they got, they came across this thing that was like hovering above these dead bodies. And it started taking off running, and it ran towards the James River, and the people who were digging the stuff out chased after it, and they chased after it all the way down towards Hollywood Cemetery and its mausoleum called W.W. Wood. And the creature or the vampire opened up the mausoleum doors and shut themselves in and waited them out. And to this day, they had to remove the body of the mausoleum and put it somewhere else, because people still sometimes trying to figure out a way trying to get in there to get the vampire, if it's still in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that gave birth to the Richmond vampire and the legend and the lore around here.
So this city is awesome.
This city is awesome.
Yeah, that's a really cool story. It's totally beautiful here. There's lots of history here. Yeah. This is the capital of the Confederacy. I forgot, or was. That was settled. But I forgot that until I actually got here. So it's a shame we're only going to be here like 12 hours, but I'd love to explore around. So that's a good opening. I was hoping that we could just go around the table and everybody could introduce themselves. First name is fine. You can use your whole name if you want, and where you're from. And we'll start with our host.
My name is Larry. I'm originally from Chicago, moved to Los Angeles, lived there for about 20 years, and moved to Richmond about 14 years ago.
My name is Harzan. I was originally born in Indiana. I've moved all up and down the East Coast, and I've lived in Richmond for the past 8 years.
My name is Isaac Markison. For the sake of brevity, I'll say that I've lived in Richmond my entire life.
Awesome.
Came here when I was 6'7", from Bolivia, military family. Lived in D.C. for 15 years, finally made the move here to Richmond in 2009, so I could say I'm officially a Richmonder. And been spreading anarchy ever since.
And your name is Cal?
My name is Cal.
And what's
Cal,
your site, since you have a site?
Oh, yeah. It's liberaterva.com.
Thanks. My name is Alan. I've lived in Richmond for, a year and a half, something like that. And it's really beautiful. I love it here. I found a really good spot. Feels like a home.
Awesome.
My name is Travis Carper, local entrepreneur, Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah. Perfect. So it's, quarter of 11 on a Tuesday night. I appreciate all you guys coming out. Nick and I made the trip out here today from Knoxville, Tennessee. I wanted to get a sense of how many people here actually have listened to the show before, by a show of hands. Everyone here except Alan. But Alan and I are going to, because Alan had a podcast that I had never heard of before. What was your show called?
It was called Always Record.
Right. So I never heard of Always Record, but apparently there's 180 episodes of it.
Okay,
yeah.
I watched
Think Book, yeah. Oh, for real?
Yeah.
All right, great. So we're making connections. This is terrific. And what did you pick up that, Isaac, what did you say?
So Always Record is a podcast hosted on the Think Book. So, yeah, I'm familiar with this podcast. Good stuff.
What is Think Book?
It's my website. Yeah, thesyncbook.com.
That's you.
Okay. No, I came across that just recently. That's really cool that you do it.
Good company. Thank you, guys. That made me feel really good. Thank you.
That's awesome. That's terrific.
Really appreciate that.
So I've been running these roundtable discussions where I leave it really open-ended. If you're not even a listener to the show, you're here tonight for some reason. There was something about this that interested you. We probably have pretty similar attitudes towards school and towards what is still at this point referred to as higher education. I'm guessing people identify somewhere on the in the libertarian kind of world. Is anyone not? Does anyone dislike that label? I mean,
I feel like libertarian. There was a point at which I could say I was comfortable with that, and I feel like it became dirtier as I watched it. I feel like I watched it sort of take on a different meaning and somewhat get co-opted in my time. So
that's actually a really good point. I'm still using it as a kind of shorthand for my effort to maximize my own individual liberty. It's a filthy word at this point, you know? I mean, what's happened in the last few years has actually been fairly ugly. And also we see that the libertarian movement, like where I am in New Hampshire, it's splitting. It's been definitely disrupted by identity politics on both sides. So you're right. It's maybe not even useful anymore as a shorthand, but we could definitely say we're all probably in the same ballpark, at least politically. So from that, I assume that we have, somewhat similar attitudes about our school experience. Does anyone just raise a hand, have a great time in public school, or think of it as a tremendous success? So, yeah, I mean, the questions that I've been bringing to these meetups that at times have been composed entirely of School Sucks listeners, and then there was like one in Denver
that had probably 20 plus people, and I think only one or two had ever heard the show before. So we've had some different types of discussions, but the questions that I've been asking people are basically for a School Sucks story. Like, when did you realize that this was not your education? You know, that that was something you were going to have to figure out for yourself. And then the second question is, how did you go about doing that? Like, what were the tools that you used? What were the steps that you took? And what were the results that you had? So I'd love to just hear people's answer to the first question. Anyone want to volunteer to go first?
Well, I mean, I didn't make it past like sixth grade. I went to detention homes. So I've lived on my own since I was like 14, 15, 16. And so at, I guess, in Bird Middle School in sixth grade, so elementary school was fifth grade, made it through there. And sixth grade, I was a very violent kid, very violent upbringing. A lot of things went on with me as a child. And so I was removed from Henrico school system at sixth grade, and they put me in Dooley School, which is over in St. Joseph's Villa, which is basically a foster system kind of thing. And they put me in there with all these other kids. And but there was no school. There was no education there. It was just behavior management system, mm-hmm. And a bunch of wild kids. And I actually was the first one to go back into the public school system ever to have gone to there and made it back out. Because when I went there, I was like, this is not me. I'm not retarded. That's basically what was they threw me in. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. But I didn't go to school past that until I got back to VCU. Well, I went and got my high school diploma, but that's a whole other story.
Right. So the reason why I wanted to start with this story is I used to work in a setting like that. It was called a school, and it was more of a school, and it was where my teaching career began with a lot of frustrations, but with a similar type of population to the population it sounds like you didn't want to be a part of, right?
It wasn't me. I was more into, yeah.
Right. Now, you talk about being on your own since you were 14. That's like basically being an adult. What did that look like when you were 14? What did you start doing to make your way in the world? Because that's something that kids who are, you know, 24, 25, 26 years old today, graduated from college, they don't know how to do that.
Yeah, and I'm shocked by that. That's what me and Isaac have been talking about for the last week. I'm shocked by that. One more time, specifically.
Whatever you want to volunteer as far as, like, how you figured out at such a young age. And I understand, like, you know, at one time in America, it was typical that a person that age might have to make his or her way in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, how did you figure out how to start doing that when you were just 14 years old?
Well, I didn't figure it out. You know, the only way I know how to answer is just to answer some scenarios.
Yeah.
So, you know, my dad's a very violent alcoholic, and he comes home, and he turns into an insane person. And he's chasing. He's violent and... I don't know if I want to go into all the nitty-gritty, everybody wants to hear all the nitty-gritty details, but he chased me around and through the apartment complex and with a knife and stuff. I had no choice. I had to leave. He's chasing me around with a fucking knife. And so I would go to laundromats. I put quarters in the fucking dryer, and the dryers would run and keep me warm in there for the local little laundromats. So if you're in a local apartment complex, they have those old-school laundromats. I'd go in there and I'd... stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
Plug up my boombox and listen to Van Halen and shit, and I was good. Until the morning, make sure I had to get out of there before the sun came up so you wouldn't get caught. And then I would go find some other friend that didn't go to school, stay in his house during the day if I could, while his parents were at work. When they left, I went on to my next.
What was your first job? What was the first thing you did for money?
Construction, 14.
But somehow you got to a place where you were a pretty successful business owner.
So I'm 17, got hair down to here, and I always had this image in my mind that when I turned 18, I was going to cut my hair off and get a button-up shirt.
Right.
So I got a fucking button-up shirt, cut my hair off. I did, for whatever reason, know River Road corridor. I knew money. I knew what they wanted to hear. I had that going on with myself, and I went up and down the road, up and down the River Road corridor, and I said, I'll cut your grass twice for free. You'll never cut your grass again after you see what I do. If somebody's on their lawnmower cutting the grass, I stopped them and said, stop. I'll cut your grass. You won't cut it again.
Mm-hmm.
And within 3 years, I was doing $200,000 a year, I guess, $150,000, $200,000, because nobody asked how much. They were so enamored with the industrial. That's what they told me, to some effect.
Yeah.
And reflecting back on it, everybody else is busy soliciting people for work and fighting over whether it was going to be $25 a yard or $22. nobody did that, you know.
So they were so impressed with you that you were able to build up a business by the time you were, what, 20 years old?
So I need to give some credit to somebody. I was just actually I feel compelled to give some credit, a guy named Mac Berman, Berman and Sons, which is pretty there's a lot of prominent people in those neighborhoods. And I mean, I feel like I'm going on about myself a little
much. No, that's fine. We got plenty
to,
of time.
Take on over. You know, I mean, he watched me wear my little fucking headlight in my head. I mean, I'd be out there cutting grass at 10 o'clock at night with flashlights. I found something I could do, and that's all I did was work. And this guy watched me for about 4 months, 5 months, and he came out and he picked up the phone and he called Mac Berman. This guy owned all the bowling alleys in the area at the time. Shouldn't be drawing a blank on that guy right now, but I am. He came out, he sat beside me one night, and I was digging a hole in his backyard all fucking night long for whatever reason, and he made a phone call, and I walked out of Berman & Sons with a new trailer, two big walk-behind mowers, what I was like $1 million worth of equipment. It was probably $30,000 worth of equipment, all because Max said, I'll back this guy.
Hmm. But by the time you were 20, with this little bit of help, you had built a very successful business, right? You were 20 years old. Where did you get the skills to do that, to outcompete everyone else? Like, what were you doing that other people weren't doing? Was it just the work ethic?
Well, I mean, so all this happened. I'm 19, 18. I didn't have a first car probably until I was 17, 18. And I've always known how to work on things. I mean, just being self-sufficient. I knew how to fix my bike. I knew how to fix my motorcycles. I took a Chevette and I put a Honda Civic gas tank in it because the Chevette's gas tank was bad from a junkyard. I Frankenstein a car together to get down the road. So I knew how to fix the lawnmowers. I knew how to work on the equipment, if you will. So I was very resourceful. And I just, as Gary Vee said, Vaynerchuk, if anybody knows, worked my face off. I was like a animal. All I did was work.
Mm-hmm.
For 3 years, 4 years.
I appreciate you sharing that.
Sure.
And I just thought that was an amazing story, you know, like on your own at 14, making a really good, comfortable, I mean, I know it's not the most comfortable work, but making a comfortable living, you know, by the time you were, at least today, most kids still don't know what to do with themselves. I didn't when
I
was
that age. I'm fascinated by that. That's why I'm here, really, quite frankly, I would say.
Absolutely. Isaac.
I'm interested for you to tell us, I don't know if you can do it briefly, how you went from landscaping to what you're doing now in IT very successfully.
So that actually goes into the school thing.
Okay.
Much more so. So do I have 3 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'm 22, doing 300 a year. I have a lot of interesting social implications to that. Backlash, because all of a sudden girls were interested in me, people were calling me sir, and I got very negative about the money, and I went surfing, and I stumbled across a book called Adult Children of Dysfunctional Families, I doubt something along those lines, in the library. I didn't even know that my upbringing was fucked up. And when I did that, I sat there for about 4 months just reading voraciously, and then my brain went on. So I went from like this pit bull from the SPCA working machine to my brain turned on. And I went, oh. And I lost interest in money and landscaping. And I went and got my high school diploma. It took me about a year. Went to J. Sarge. I have a story about that, having to read a poem. It's an interesting point. I don't want to take up too much. J. Sarge, local community college.
Okay.
But I got my foot in the door at J. Sarge. Bumbled my way through there, got to VCU. By the time I was at VCU, my first math class, I raised my hand. I was like, what's a variable? I didn't even know what that was. Along that journey through landscaping, I was fascinated by computers, and I learned how to program my own invoicing systems and all that. So I was equally fascinated with that, and then I took that and applied it at VCU. So contrary to the school sucks thing here, from my experience going to school with my being, I was... It was an intensely powerful experience for me going to school. But what's interesting is it's a very liberal school, and being a little closet white redneck kid, going into that environment, I quickly was corrected about everything that was wrong with me.
In what year are we talking?
90, 80, oh shit. Kurt Cobain died, 94? 94.
94.
Yeah, 94.
It's the year the movie PCU came out.
Something like that, huh?
Which was totally about... There's a movie called PCU that was in 1994, pretty much like a crystal ball for what's happening in higher education today,
okay,
with all the political correctness. So it's interesting that you're this, you go to this liberal institution and you're this imperfect person who has to be molded and corrected.
Very much so.
That's still a thing.
And I was highly impressionable, just like a 14-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
I was taking it in, like, y'all tell me, obviously, I don't know anything.
Right, right. You
know, so, but I have a lot of interesting thoughts on that. What interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, absolutely. We actually talk a lot about that on my show. But that's an introduction to a fascinating story, and I'm glad you're here. And I thank you for, you know, sharing what you shared before we even started. And yeah, we'll probably come back to this. We can get into more of this. Who wants to go next on that same question? Isaac.
So I'd say in my middle school years, I was very interested in doing my best in school. I was like straight A student all through middle school. Going into ninth grade, I was asked to apply for the governor's school.
Yeah.
And I realized that I would be separated from my friends, so I wasn't much interested in that. Like, I went through the process of applying and all that, but I wanted to stay with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
So ninth grade, I was still a good student, but getting into girls and metal music and pot came along around 10th grade or so. And by 10th grade, I just completely stopped caring about school.
Mm-hmm.
I also realized that in my honors advanced classes that I was seeing the same kids all the time, and I never really got to see my friends. So I lost interest in school because of that. I ended up going to community college, where I was introduced to the School Sucks podcast, tragedyandhope.com. I started watching conspiracy videos on YouTube. One notable one was Esoteric Agenda. And
I'm unfamiliar with this.
Yeah. So seeing, listening to your podcast and seeing documentaries like that, it just sparked my curiosity again. So I would spend hours and hours every day educating myself, reading books, articles, YouTube videos, podcasts, and just doing that all the time. And by the time that I was sitting back in my community college classrooms, it was just way too slow paced for me, where I was taking classes and things that I had been learning about, like biology and natural medicine. So by the time I was sitting in the classroom, they were just, you know, skimming on the surface and not going very deep, or they were teaching things that were 15 years out of date.
How did you find School Sucks?
A friend of mine, Kaylee.
Okay.
I'm not sure how she discovered it, but we worked together, and she introduced me to
it. Why did she think it would be good for you? Or how did it come up? Like, tell me, I'm just curious, because yeah. I'd like kids to find it in college, so I'm wondering how that happened.
Well, I was, like I said, I mean, I was just learning all over the place, and I was really open to talking to people about anything and everything. So I guess she thought, just because I was a person who listened to podcasts and books, that I might be interested in the School Sucks podcast. I told her that I was interested in, like, decentralization, and I'm interested in taking power away from powerful industries like the pharmaceutical industry.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess she figured School Sucks was up my alley.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and we'll come back. I'd like to hear about what you did after that. But anyone else want to just address that first question?
I'll go next time.
All right, cool. Cal.
I guess I don't have much memories before six. When I came here from Bolivia, I went to a school for foreign kids because I couldn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a mix of different wild kids just trying to figure out English.
Right.
At Deerfield Run in Laurel. And then went to a regular school, had a speech therapist, hated school though. My first experience at like even a Deerfield Run was, coming to a round table, getting my tray, and everyone sitting on the opposite side, same remarks. I don't know. We got into fighting. So school was like, a crazy, prison experiment, I would say, for myself.
Right.
But I was more like a Rorschach character. You know, you're stuck with me and we're kind of just fighting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Speech therapist, finally, when I got to a regular school, people can speak English. And I think my most liberating experience I remember was, I think, after like second grade, because I had to do like kindergarten and first grade in 1 year to catch up. I think second grade was like at the end of the year, I took everything out of my desk, put it in my backpack, all like the stuff that I never finished, the homework I never took home. And I took a shortcut behind these apartments because I knew my father would spy and watch me. And I found like this dumpster, and I just threw everything in there, and it was great. It was awesome. Just dumping all that stuff out there.
Oh, you're School supplies?
Yes. Yeah, so not like school homework I never did, assignments, stuff like that, stuff from the teacher I was supposed to return home. I just kept it on my desk. I had a desk. I just kept it in there. And at the end of the year, I just took all the stuff, put it in my backpack. And then my normal route that I would take home, I took a shortcut behind these apartments, and there was this dumpster, and I just dumped everything in there. And I did it just in time, because as soon as I walked outside of the dumpster, my father was waiting right there, and just like, so why are you taking this shortcut? I was like, just wanted to find a faster way to get home.
Right.
And that was like the most fun I had, just dumping that school stuff. I never really particularly enjoyed school. I just thought it was just a waste of time. I wouldn't say there's anything ever learned from school. I guess the visceral experience from all the students were the same from all the teachers. And then eventually, I guess I got a put in a program. So you have TAG, right? Talented and Gifted.
Yeah.
Right. So like Justice League, you have your Justice League and then you have your Suicide Squad, right? Of like Rugrats.
Right.
They put me, instead of TAG, they put me in the opposite. They called it Rockets. And they're like, you're, they're your dyslexic kids. They're your kids who are having fights. There was like that school versions of Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But they printed it up. They made it seem like this is like a place for cool kids to do cool stuff, you know, because you're all awesome. And then it's like, I try to buy into it, but then like, I'm seeing people who I would like continuously have fights with in the same group. It's like, this is not really for cool kids. It's like, I don't know about that. Until next year, I saw my brother, David. He's in this, he's like sitting across from me. And it's like, whoa, what are you doing here? This is for cool kids. And then.
And you're how old?
I'm like nine. And that's when I realized, like, this is not for cool kids if he's here. And then I realized this is for troublemakers. And then the teacher was like, you know, you guys don't have to be here. It's your first day. You know, it's you know, you guys can leave your likes. Yes, it's like, you know, say the things he needs to say. And I realized my brother David is smarter than this. He never had to go to dyslexic class or talk English. I was like, David, get out of here. We're getting out of here. So we got out. I spend most of my time in school just skipping classes, going to creeks, damming up creeks, and just exploring like you know the creeks behind houses, and that's pretty much how I spent most of my middle school years, high school years, skipping class and going to the woods and damming up creeks. There was a moment where I never had friends. I never really cared to make friends. I never really liked people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most funniest part was like when you had the shooters, right? The Kleboy and Cassidy or something. People would say, you know, Cal, you know, don't come and shoot us up too, right? Because I'm always targeting.
Oh, the like, Columbine.
The Columbine shooting.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because I keep to myself, right? But yeah, I wouldn't say like during those years, I just skipped school or had like quick money making schemes. Like sell bubble gum at school or going to soccer games, selling sodas for a dollar. I had a little lawn mowing business too going on. Or sometimes I just take like a shopping cart that was like half the width, not a regular one that you kind of go up the stairs with. And I go to apartments just selling stuff. And so like I will like ask them like, you know, you look like a size 10. It's like, here's a perfect, these shoes, right? It's like, yeah, these might look good on you. And I would ask them if they have anything that they would, they're looking to get rid of, and I'll take them, put them in my shopping cart, and just do that for a couple of years. And so sometimes people say, like I go out there spreading anarchy, talking to people.
Yeah.
And I think my experience in being able to do well in that comes from just talking to strangers all the time, trying to sell them something. And I think a lot of that kind of benefited from that. But yeah, I would say that my school experience never. There's nothing. There's no teacher I've ever learned anything from. I had one teacher where we just. Maybe one cool teacher where we just examined The Matrix for like the entire year.
The film?
Yeah, the film. Yeah, that's what we did.
That's neat.
Yeah, we just talk about it. It's like, well, let's look at the religious aspect. Let's look at it. It's like, that's all we did. He was like, he should not have been a teacher, but I was not going to protest.
So it's interesting. I mean, the reason why I asked this question is I talked to a lot of people about this, and I hear a lot of stories about people who are like naturally independent and naturally defiant. And like I went through 15,000 hours of government school from the age of 6 to the age of 17, and it never occurred to me at any point that there was any problem other than me, right? That I was, that school was unassailable, right? That there, it was unquestionable. That this is just the thing that everybody does. Everybody's making it work. All the people around me are seeming to be comfortable there. I fucking hated it. I, you know, did well in grades 1 through 6, like everyone does. And then, or, you know, everyone in my school did, and then got to middle school, and it was like, oh my God, how long is this going to go?
Right.
It was like suddenly there was a perspective where you go over this hump, and you're like, oh shit, this, I don't think this ever ends, you know, or this is only halfway. And you look at what's behind you, and then middle school is like all these new headaches, but it never occurred to me that anything was defective about it other than me. And so I always want to just, you know, throw that out there in these conversations, because I want to hear what, you know, people have to say about that. Because a lot of people have these stories of like, yeah, I never liked it, or I always knew it wasn't education, but how? Like, I didn't know. This occurred to me like when I was in a master's program to become a teacher. It's like, oh shit, that wasn't education. That was just like indoctrination.
Right.
I was 24 years old when I realized this. So I'm fascinated by people who got it when they were like six. And it sounds like you understood this from a pretty early age.
I think it's because I came from another country. So everything was foreign to me. Everything was culture shock, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm in music class, and the teacher's like, well, when you're ready, Kyle, just jump in. And I was like, I'm sitting, and everyone's doing like this thing called the electric slide. I've never seen this before.
And, right, right.
Yeah, you know, so I'm mortified. I'm standing on the side of the wall. I'm just sitting down. I never participated. So like everything is like, I'm not going to participate. I don't know what's going on. This sounds like some kind of voodoo hoodoo devil stuff, and I'm just going to keep to myself.
I'm curious how much that has to do with the politeness aspect of the personality trait, agreeableness. Have you taken the Big Five personality test? Where does everybody rank in agreeableness?
Pleaser, right? I mean, that's right. The idea.
Yeah.
But tell me more. What do you mean?
So this is actually from Jordan Peterson's recent iteration of the Big Five personality test. He breaks down agreeableness into empathy and politeness. And politeness is basically your general tendency to respect authority. So I'm about midway in the empathy side of agreeableness, and I was about a one for politeness, which is your respect for authority, basically. But I wonder if this is just a personality thing.
I just didn't want anyone to look at me, right? Like, I just didn't want to stick out, and I don't know. I mean, I tried to get away with stuff behind people's back if I could, like behind the authority's back. I didn't have any allegiance to authority. But once I got to a certain point, it wasn't interesting to me. It wasn't exciting to me. And I didn't want any part of it, and I didn't put any effort into it. And the feedback that I got from doing that is, well, something's wrong with you, or something. No one ever said that explicitly. It's just like, oh, something must be wrong with me. But I don't think I was trying to please anybody, you know? It's an interesting question. It's something that's worth looking into, I think, a little deeper. But go ahead.
I was just curious. So you say you threw your stuff in the dumpster, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I imagine I'm sure we all have our moments where that must have been a big moment for you.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Libertarian, a very liberating moment.
Yeah.
There's no, you probably, like, they probably changed you, I have to guess.
Yeah.
It was just like, I'm a man now, right?
how old were you when that happened?
I was probably seven. Very young. The thing is, so from Bolivia, different culture, like here, second generation here, for example, they'll threaten them, the kids, like, if you do misbehave, we're going to send you to Bolivia, right? So Bolivia's not a crazy awesome place. It is maybe right now because, like, you know, the DA is out of there, but I haven't been there in a long time. My family's just came vacationing right there right now. But it was a horrible place. So, like, the only, like, my mantra would be, like, everyone's either a liar or a coward, right? Until proven otherwise. I never met my parents and knew who they were until I came here to the U.S. So I had very much distrust of them, of authority, of everyone, you can say in general.
Sure. Yeah,
so
that's,
I guess school for me was an obviously sucks in that kind of environment.
Right.
Coming from Bolivia.
Yeah, I mean, those are different stories that you guys have told. Like, I had what certainly appeared to be like a happy little life. Like, I had two parents. I found out when I got older that they didn't like each other, but I didn't know that when I was four,
right,
you know? So life seemed harmonious enough. And I think I just kind of grew up thinking like, oh, I guess everything will just be all right somehow. It was like things were made comfortable to the point where I didn't really have to think about anything. And it wasn't until, like, I got out in the world and I realized I had absolutely no survival skills when I was 21 years old. You know, I had no idea what to do.
Do you feel like you're bubble wrapped?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was just completely ill-equipped to deal with anything in the adult world. I realized this as soon as I went to college. And then I started making my own trouble kind of accidentally from not having any life skills, from not having, like, I mean, I guess I had some social skills, but I wasn't good at like reading people or understanding situation, that kind of street smarts that you develop that you, you know, can probably from living, from being in the world, from being independent, you get at an earlier age. I had none of that. I was just like a mark, you know, for like I had a sign over my head, just like take advantage of me. You know, I mean, that's the adult that was put out into the world. I mean, I don't blame my parents for that. And I don't blame anything for that except myself, because, you know, and I'm not beating myself up about it, but that was my introduction to the world. So when I got to the point where I actually started to become independent and self-sufficient and learn things on my own, the first impulse was to look back at everything in life that had happened before that and resent everybody and resent everything. Like, everybody lied to me. Everybody made me soft, you know, all of that. So you guys have told some stories that are quite different from that experience. I just find that interesting. You know,
do you find these stories often?
Cal's saying about kind of having this independence in this, I guess, questioning of authority or distrust for authority. Like, those concepts didn't even occur to me until I was an adult failing my way through the real world. Like, oh, I could be like, oh, no one's coming to solve this problem. You know, like, I was in my 20s by the time I had experiences like you were having when you were 12, probably. So I just think it's interesting to hear that. I do hear that pretty frequently. But, you know, I hear stories that sound similar, but everybody's story is unique. And that's one of the, I think, the gratifying things about, like, doing this for the last 40 days is hearing all of them. And I look for patterns, but they're all unique. Yeah. So
I have a newborn, and I have a 2-year-old, and I'm 48, and I sort of tuned out from the world. I became very cynical. What's interesting to me, and now I'm back, and I'm very interested in the world now because of my child. And what I'm hearing that story about with you, I think, and I heard him talk about an entrepreneurialism, you know, he said it didn't occur to him to throw his shit in a dumpster. You know, it doesn't occur to a lot of people to be an entrepreneur. So I'm feeling compelled to have a voice to speak to that generation and tell them they have a voice and they're not just pawns, right? And because they might not have that to throw the shit in the dumpster, right?
Yeah, yeah. I still have this impulse built into me. Like, this was probably 5 years ago. I like to think I'm cured of it now. I remember walking out of the DMV and going, yes, I just registered my car. And I'm like, I stopped in the parking lot. I'm like, I'm excited about registering my car. Like, there was just something about, like, ticking that box. I'm compliant, like, completely unconsciously, but just this happy feeling about having paperwork, right? The shit that you're throwing in the dumpster, it's like something had been built into me through that experience. You know, I mean, school is lesson one, obedience, lesson two, conformity. And it kind of, those two things together, like, if you don't have to think for yourself and be independent, and you don't have to worry about asserting yourself and standing out there on your own, which are the opposite of obedience and conformity, then you become very apathetic, right? You're not entrepreneurial. You're not assertive. And you're not really invested or passionate about most things, right? Because you're not really your own person. So how did I get to being excited about government paperwork? Or how do I get back to being excited about government paperwork? It was just when you said that, it was a contrast. It's like, okay, well, you already didn't have these lessons embedded in your head, you know, the day you're dumping stuff in the dumpster.
Right.
And I think I probably did things like that too. Like, my backpack would be just stuffed full of shit, and I would throw it out and probably feel relieved about it.
Yeah.
But when all was said and done, after 12 years of school, 4 years of college, 2 years of graduate school, something had been like inculcated in me, like, be excited about getting your paperwork done, you know? And it was at that moment I was like, okay, never be excited about paperwork.
I've been driving illegally since I was like 13, 14. Never officially got my license until I was like 19. Kind of like in the same vein, like, I had my first fake ID when I was 14, through the DMV, because, like, technically you can mess up the information through the DMV if you never had an ID before, and that'll be registered in the database. So it made me 2 years older. And so I was able then to finally have real work, working like a KB Toy Works Video Warehouse, things like that. And the funny thing is, one day I was like applying to work at Best Buy, and like it was the assistant manager from KB Toy Works 2 years ago, and he's looking at my application. He's like, "You're still 16." I was like, So yeah, I think kind of like in the same vein, it's like for me, it's like my independence would be like making money and having money. I had like my 10th. I always had a journal. So like my 10th, when I was 10 years old, I had a journal. And like, so like, what's my worst fear? Like losing my money.
Right. Yeah.
But I think the only, the great path was like anarcho-capitalism, things like that, that really, jive with me was like looking at a Wizard magazine, which will tell you like how much, like good time preference, how much a comic book would be worth today if you owned it like 30 years ago. And, the magazine, so I was like, well, I better start investing in comic books. And so today I like, thousands of comic books just waiting to kind of, you know, invest and sell.
Right.
But I
right.
think, like the not opening them was very hard. Like I have toys I've never opened, just kind of like my own investment. And there's like a weird MGTOW thing that people go out there, but also my 10th grade journal, cause my parents were divorced. I wrote like, one day I'm going to sell my comic book for like $10 million, but I'm never going to get married because he might rob me.
That was like me with my baseball cards. And yeah. Unfortunately they all became worthless. Larry, you want to go? How did you get here?
I really don't remember much of my public school experience. It was a long time ago. I pretty much checked out from the first day I went there. And I really identified with you saying how, you know, you felt that it was something defective with you.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, obviously I wasn't getting the good grades or anything like that. So, you know, I went through my whole experience not interested in anything they were teaching me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get much interaction with teachers. I stayed quiet. I'm very introverted. I stayed quiet most of the time, so I was never a problem child or anything. I just kind of sat in the back of the class, you know, quietly, and they left me alone, and I was kind of, I was fine with that.
I wouldn't
have been fine. Yeah. So I mean, really, out of all of my public school years, I'd say a typing class. That's how old I am. I mean, a typing class was the most value I got from public school. I mean, we did it on the old typewriters. I mean, I learned computer programming on Apple IIe's. So,
yeah.
So how I got here, after public school, I bounced around, just doing various jobs, restaurant work, you know, that kind of thing, like low level stuff. And about my mid 20s, it's like, well, I better get a career. So I went to a tech school, one of the tech schools that'll take you if you have a pulse.
Mm-hmm.
And I did very well. I mean, graduated from there and graduated with honors and all that. And all of a sudden it's like, I graduated and no one's hiring me. It's like, what's going on? You know, you go to college, so you're able to find work.
Yeah. It sucks when you get realize a job. That isn't
like,
true.
Yeah. It's like, what the hell? You know, I just spent, you know, $40,000 on an education that's doing nothing for me. So I started, I went to school for IT and I started, studying for certifications, and I got a Cisco certification. And then all of a sudden, you know, people are interested in hiring me. It's like, okay, all right. I just spent 3 years in college. I spent $40,000 and no one was interested in hiring me, but I bought a book for $150 and spent another $200 for a certification exam. Now people want to hire me.
Right.
It's like, what the hell good is, you know, college for in terms of that? So I got into the IT field, did that for about 10 years, and just realized I didn't like it anymore. I left IT in, I want to say it was 2012, and I was trying to get into some other kind of career, you know, just anything other than IT. Was out of work for a little while, so I walked into a music store to buy some picks, and I just happened to say, hey, are you hiring for Christmas help? It was around Christmas time. They're like, yeah. So I got a job scheduling music lessons. And I was really surprised on how very simple concepts went past people that I was trying to sign up for lessons.
Like what?
That you get 4 lessons a month, 1 per week.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very difficult concept for a lot of people, and it shocked me. So one night after work and dealing with that, I went into Google, and I'd always heard the term dumbing down of America.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Google and I Googled dumbing down of America. John Taylor Gatto popped up. I read like a brief product description of dumbing us down. Went to YouTube, watched his video on, I think it was like a 13 or 14 lessons of elite schools, and really kind of got into that. And because I was curious, I was always curious, like, you know, what are students learning in elite schools that, you know, we didn't learn in our schools? You know, why are these people always elevated to leadership positions? You know, what are they learning? So that's always been a curiosity for me. And then just like watching that video with John Taylor Gatto, just kind of, it's like, oh, okay, that's what was going on.
So school is not necessarily the problem. It's the kind of school.
Right.
Right? Because, right. Yeah, he does make this real clear distinction between the two different types of school. And then come to find out, our school system actually comes from Prussia, where they had a tiered school system. They had a school system for the people who were going to manage society.
Right.
And then they had a school system called the Volksschule, the people's school, for those who are going to basically be the workers in society. Now, you know that that was the first thing I ever found too, right? Mm-hmm. Dumbing us down?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
Well, I didn't find it by Googling dumbing us down.
Right.
I was in graduate school doing research for some project, I don't remember what, and it was in one of the search results. And I remember the phrase dumbing us down, so I opened it and started reading it and said, huh, yeah, that's crazy that some people think that school is like a conspiracy against Americans. And then I realized it wasn't going to help me with whatever I was trying to do. So I closed it and I went back to looking for, you know, whatever I was trying to find for this project. But a seed was planted. It was like, oh, yeah, I guess if you did want to scientifically, I didn't have the vocabulary, but basically if you wanted to scientifically manage a society, if you wanted to steer people, what other institution would you use to do it? It would have to be school.
Right.
And I mean, you could make the same case for the entertainment industry or the media. I mean, they're helpful. But school is like, you know, people complain about it and they go to PTA meetings and they shake their fists.
Yeah.
And they don't like the teacher and they don't like the superintendent, but they implicitly trust it, right? Because they give their kids to it 35 hours a week, even with all the complaints. And some don't do any complaining at all. And even those complaints can be tempered by a story that people tell themselves. Like, it's probably okay. Because if it isn't okay, that means either me or the missus has to quit our job and find some other place for these kids to be, or we have to keep them at home. So let's just kind of pretend that it's okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So after John Taylor Gatto, you know, I started Googling him. And then these websites started popping up like tragedyandhope.com and School Sucks. And I saw, you know, some of these videos of from this crazy guy named Brett Vinat, you know.
That's me.
The School Sucks Project.
Yep.
You know, with these videos of like, why would you entrust your kids to the people you've never seen or know? Or, you know, if you were going to build a house, you would expect, you know, to see plans. How come you never see plans for, you know, like your children's education? I thought it was really interesting. So I went to the School Sucks website. And one of the things I'll usually do is when I find a new podcast, I'll download the first four episodes and just like give it a listen, see if I like it or not. And what I heard, I thought was absolutely crazy at first, but there was something to it. And I listened to those first four episodes over and over and over and over again. It's like, wow, that really changed my mind in terms of like government school and what the purpose of it is. And, you know, even like concepts of the, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing that over and over again, and, you know, just it kind of took over my mind for a little while. And, you know, I really had to wrestle with that. And, you know, since then, I haven't listened to every show you've done, but I've listened to a good chunk of it. And it just kind of reawakened myself intellectually, mm-hmm. going through, you know, you talked with, I think it was Wes Bertrand about objectivism. I really got into that for a while. Trivium, I studied a lot of that. It's like, after I was done with college, I didn't read anything for, you know, like 10 years after, you know, listening to School Sucks and hearing what you had to say and just like really interesting things. I mean, there's so many interesting topics that you cover. It's like, man, I've just been reading like mad for the last 4 years. It's been a fantastic journey, and thank you for that.
Well, that's awesome. I really appreciate you sharing that story. So the first four episodes, huh?
Over and over again? Yep, over and over.
That motivates me to maybe like re-record them and put them somewhere more prominent.
See, and the funny thing is you know, after I'd reached out to you and I knew you were coming back, I wondered if you added bumper music to one of the episodes, like after I had heard it from the first time, because like, this sounds different.
At one point, I downloaded the first episode and I put an introduction on it that was recorded in like 2014. And I forget what I was asking people to do. But yeah,
that makes sense because like the original version I had heard without the bumper music, and I just remember, you know, you did your critical thinking question, all that, and then you heard the bell ring. But the episode I listened to recently is like, oh, there's bumper music here. Okay, that's been changed.
Yep. But I downloaded it, added that, and re-uploaded it.
Yeah.
Which is convenient.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So yeah, I mean that's pretty much my School Sucks story there. So
well, I appreciate you sharing that, and it's good to know that people are searching Gatto and finding us. So I like that. Have at it.
Cool. So my name is Herzan Flores. I kind of really first realized that school is just kind of BS in middle school.
Yeah.
And was interesting how it came about. So I grew up moving around all up and down the East Coast. Both my parents are immigrants, and I guess, you know, they would be what all the socialists would call like bougie, but they weren't rich at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were just they came here as student visas to Purdue, and then after they were there, I was born and my sisters were born, and my dad was like, oh god, I need a real job, I need to make some money. And he would work at companies and like after every 2 years like get a better job.
Mm-hmm.
Go work for a better company. And like keep doing that. And one of the consequences of that is, while I was growing up, I would have to switch schools. So every 2 or 3 years, like I was somewhere else at a different school. And I, you know, hated it at the time because I didn't get to make like a lot of long-term friends.
Mm.
But I ended up seeing that a lot of people were really similar, even though they were different people. And that some teachers cared. Some teachers were good. Some teachers were cool. But a lot of teachers didn't care. And the classes didn't change.
Right, right.
It was the same comply, do this, do that, or face consequences. By seventh grade year, my parents were like noticing that I was like not engaged in school at all. And they're like, hey, we're going to try and homeschool you for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And in that 1 year, they're both from Mexico. They're not confident in their English skills. So they hire like a teacher to teach me English twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And for the rest of the subjects, they just buy me books and they're like, just read the books.
Right.
And I'm like, well, like how much of the book? Like, just do the whole book. And I'm like, that's a lot. And I'm like, you mean you're going to be at home, you know, eat when you want, like just study, you know, we'll look at the things and we'll quiz you. I'm like, okay. So after a year, I actually go through like the whole books. And
this all just happens over the course of a year?
Yes.
Okay.
And like halfway through it, or like 3/4 to it, like we realize like, oh, I have to like take these tests. And not only do I have to like pass these tests, I have to get a B.
Okay.
And if I don't get a B, like that whole year doesn't count for anything. And I was really glad I listened to my parents, because had I not like gone through the whole book, all those books, like I wouldn't have been able to pass it, but I passed them with like A's.
Mm-hmm.
Like I aced them. I went, and they were like, hey, like, we can't really afford to have a private teacher for English. Like, you're going to have to go back to school, public school. So I go back to eighth grade, and I get placed in advanced math.
Mm-hmm.
In 1 year of homeschooling, I go from not being able to do, like, sixth grade math level stuff to grade above everyone else in eighth grade.
Wow.
So that, personally, for me, really showed me, these guys don't know what they're doing. And that in eighth grade, I made the plan of I'm gonna get out of this public school as fast as I possibly can, because like this is stupid.
Did you use that language, or was that what you were saying? You were
to myself.
Yes. Okay.
I was telling myself, this is stupid. I barely like any of these classes. The only classes I liked was like physical science.
Mm-hmm. Schools where all the beakers are. The school has all the resources too that, you know, a lot of people don't just have around their house. Like schools and colleges do concentrate resources. So once you kind of know the game to like go to the place to use the stuff, I mean, I know physical science is not beakers necessarily, but my point is that there's some value at the school, you realize.
But they don't, they make it hard for you to like utilize it for yourself. So I made that plan to like, I'm going to graduate early.
Right.
So I go to like the off, I go to the front office and be like, hey, like I do some research and I figure out that there's actually these things called advanced placement tests. Mm. Where you can, you study the material for the year and then you take this test. And it's the same story as though you were homeschooled. You have to pass it with a B.
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't get the credit. In eighth grade, I concentrate a lot on science and I get an advanced placement in that.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through freshman year, I moved to Richmond from Newport News. I start going to the office administration there and asking them, hey, like, I want to take these two tests. And they laugh at me. The principal and the assistant principal laugh at me, telling me that you're not going to be able to pass. But they give me the books anyway. I take those placement tests and I pass it.
How long did you have to study for?
Oh, I studied hours, you know. I essentially would do all the classwork. I would do all the classwork in the classes, like, there immediately. And in the classes that I cared about, I would do the homework in class. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't have to do it at home. In the classes that I didn't care about, I would just goof off and not do anything and read my own books.
Right.
I had a really big interest in military history. So I was reading... a lot of the Sun Tzu, The Art of War.
Right, right.
And like a bunch of classes. And the teachers kind of hated that. They didn't like me bringing in my own books and reading in their class where they're doing something.
No, they usually, yeah, when I was a teacher, I wouldn't have liked that.
And they hated it the most that at the end of the year, like during the big test, like 15 minutes I was done and then I left.
Mm-hmm.
I take the advanced placement tests in ninth grade and I take a couple more in 10th grade. And then there's a couple classes you can't take advanced placement tests for. Your senior level classes and some of your junior level classes, you have to take physically. So I take an after school program that's usually taken by people who like failed
mm-hmm.
the year before. And during that time, it was also, I was like 16. So I used that time of driving to that school to get my, burn through my learner's permit
mm-hmm.
to like get those driving hours. I ended up finishing high school early by a year with an advanced diploma.
Like, and you were pretty much your only teacher through this entire process.
Yes. But the other part of the motivation was, like, I didn't really like a lot of people, like, going through school. High school was better than middle school, like, hands down.
Yeah.
But even in high school, like, I understand now, looking back on it, that, you know, everyone's going through hormones and figuring their shit out. And
right.
I didn't enjoy it because I didn't understand the culture. Coming from a Hispanic background, my parents, you know, they're busy working. You know, they don't understand American culture that much. And I'm there kind of like knowing both languages and we're not like super open. I didn't have like internet or anything. I had to like hack my neighbor's internet.
Yeah.
Like browse the internet, which was another thing I did in high school. So I graduated early and I go to VCU. And VCU, I really felt like was a lot better than public school. But very quickly, after a couple of years, I realized it's kind of like a money drain.
It's a money drain?
It's a complete money drain.
Yeah, absolutely. Were you taking loans?
No.
No, so?
My family helped pay for part of it, and I worked.
Okay.
Through college to also help pay part of it.
And you were going full-time?
Yes. After I do a while of that, I realize I'm not actually enjoying what I'm doing here. My grades and my general education classes are reflecting that. And the classes that I like, my core chemistry classes, you know, I was doing stellar. I was doing great. But I realized that part of what the teachers try to get you to do in school is to have good study habits.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have that unless I was interested or I had some external motivation. And
it's amazing they don't understand that. But yeah,
in high school, I had the external motivation of I want to get out. I hate this place. I want to do my own thing.
So between what, like eighth grade and going to college, you were your only teacher, but you're still in the middle of the school system, right? Which means you're trying to just speed your way through and survive, which I think a lot of people have to do, but a lot of people don't realize they have those options. And how did you realize that you were able to do that, to graduate early?
Well, it was when I came back to ninth grade, and there was this whole process where they had to like validate what I took.
What you did the year before.
And they're like, oh, did you take this test? I'm like, yeah, yeah, I took this test. Here's the scores for that. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, then what about here? Like, what did you get here? Like, oh, you know, here's the results for that. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. And then I was like, wait a minute. So I just fill out this paperwork, and I show you like the thing that I did and the test results, and I pass this class.
You skip ahead, pretty
like,
much.
I pass this class, and he's like, yeah. And he was like a technical person punching in the stuff in the system.
Right.
And then I asked him like, so where can I get the paperwork? Where can I get these for like this class? And he's like, oh, you have to go to the main office. And that's like when I started going to the main office.
And that was how you figured it all out?
And that's when I was like asking him, hey, I want this for him. I want this. And like, oh, you have to apply to borrow that book from the school because it's our book. You can't just have it. And I'm like, motherfucker, like, these guys aren't fucking using their books in their classes. Like, just give me the damn book. Like, no, you have to request it. It's our book.
Right.
They get in your way. They don't like it.
Right.
I noticed that really quickly, and it angered me. I was like, oh, you bastard. You're getting between me and my will.
But if you can do this, what use am I, they might say. You know, or what use is this place that we believe in?
Maybe that is like the thought they had. And I lacked the empathy at that point to understand that.
Right.
But either way, like I still asked for it. I got through it, and that was the only reason why I realized it.
Mm-hmm.
Was kind of just happenstance, like by accident.
Right.
And then I kind of just like, wait a minute, what? I can do that? Let me explore this.
So. You're talking 10 years ago, right, for this? And the good news is that a lot more people are realizing that now, like today, because it's getting harder to ignore the fact that, you know, there are paths around this and into what you want to do that are much more expedient. I appreciate you sharing that story. If we could take like a 5 or 10 minute break maybe and people want to refill their drinks. I have one more question that I wanted to ask everybody before we wrap up. I don't want to keep anybody too long because I know it is late, but if you guys don't mind going like another half hour, that would be awesome.
1121 Richmond meetup, take two. If you were to look back and offer like one piece of wisdom to people who are teenagers or who are in the situation where you were having some of these difficulties or some of these realizations, what would that piece of wisdom be? What's been the thing that's most helpful to you?
I would say look beyond the curriculum. Find what's interesting to you and go after it. And I think one of the great things about living today, like when I was growing up and I was going through school, high school and all that, the places to find information was the public library. Now you have so many resources. You can go to YouTube. You can Google something. You can even take like the open courseware from MIT, Khan Academy. Just find what you're interested in and passionate in and find like all the skills that you would need to build that passion. And the resources are out there and just go after it.
You talked about an $150 book. Right. What was that book? How did you find it? How did you know that that was going to be the thing that helped you?
Well, it wasn't a $150 book. I forgot how much it cost, actually.
An expensive
book? Maybe it was a set. I mean, IT books are expensive.
Right, right.
That's how they get you, and you have to recertify every couple of years. But I always knew that certifications were important in the IT world. But I figured that a you know, bachelor's degree would hold as much weight, if not more. I was wrong. I was completely wrong on that. And after getting turned down for a lot of jobs, it's like, well, okay, school failed me, so now I'm going to find my, you know, what I need. I mean, everybody seems to want certification, so I'm going to go after that. And I did, and I got hired. So, yeah.
What was their degree in?
It was in computer networking, type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But a lot of those were probably being presented to employers, just the degree, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't have experience or anything to show anything for it. But you know, with that degree, you're getting a vendor neutral information.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very helpful if you want to go out and, you know, actually do something for someone. I mean, people want to know that you can do Active Directory or Windows or Cisco or, you know, what have you. So, yeah. So after not being able to find a job, I went out, started reading some books, took a simple test, and that was it.
So beyond that, what was something that really sparked up your interest or your motivation to teach yourself? Like the realization that like, oh my God, there's a lot of stuff out there that's very accessible.
Just the curiosity, really. just fascinating topics that I really wanted to go into deeper for a personal satisfaction of doing it.
So what was one of those other topics?
Tourism education.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said earlier, I didn't engage with school much, but you know, I never went to good schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they weren't known as good schools, and I always kind of felt like the education we were getting was not like a good education. Just like, you know, whatever, you know, you go to school and whatever, it is what it is. So just going back and you know, really spending time with like grammar, logic, rhetoric, buying math books and reading math books, is just trying to learn as much as I could, just for, you know, my own personal satisfaction.
So I remember in school just being dispirited. You spend the majority of your day, the most productive part of your day, in this classroom, being told what to do, wake up at early in the early morning, just completely disoriented, and just became absolutely apathetic. By the time I was in junior year of high school, I was suicidal. Obviously, there were other things going on in my life, but I think school had a large part to do with it. Like, I was tired of being a slave. So if I had a piece of advice to someone coming up or someone still in high school, I would say, find something that you're passionate about. Find anything that gives you a drive to be interested in the world. And I think that's kind of abstract, and like a practical way to do that is to find a physical practice that lands you in your body, to not get so caught up in your head, and be real in the world outside of school, whether that's fighting or weight training or whatever it is for you.
There's something that's satisfying and I think pretty impactful about that kind of cause and effect relationship. Like, I do this thing and there's a product. What was that for you?
For me, I really like became a person again after high school. I had a chance to travel across the country. So I remember just being on the open road, and it put a spark in my brain, just seeing all these new places. And
it's really something, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How long did you do it for?
A little over a month.
Yeah.
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 So went all across the United States. So if you have the opportunity to do that, I would also say, like, I don't know how unique this was, but like at the same time, I was thinking a lot about death and like getting over my fear of death, and realizing how important it is to do whatever it is that's drawing your attention. Like, there's a reason something is capturing your attention, and you should go and do that. Try to put all of this programming of what other people are telling you that you should care about behind you. And if something captures your attention, find out why. Like, go up to that thing and
right.
Study it, look at it, and like just be a person.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Be your chest. Howl at the moon if that's what you need to wake up.
Right.
And then hit the books.
But be kind of connected to yourself.
Absolutely.
And to the world around you.
Right.
In a conscious way. Yeah.
Right.
I really like that.
I'd say hit the ground and hit the pedal and start making money.
Yeah.
Whether in grammar school, middle school, high school, start figuring out a way to be independent, provide for yourself. For myself, like, the only time I ever got something I ever wanted, I'd have to wait till like my birthday, and it'd be like maybe one thing that I'm missing. Like, my shoes are falling apart, I have to wait till my birthday. It's like, I can't wait that long. It's like 8 months away. So for me, like, the greatest thing I ever felt like good and control was always having money. And I always made sure I had, like, even like when I was 10 years old, I had like $100 saved away, stashed away, just in case, and just build that up.
How did you say you got it again? You mentioned
I went door to door. Asking people their stuff that they want to get rid of, and I just resold the stuff they wanted to get rid of.
I missed that before.
I even sold my wallet at one point.
How would you present that to somebody? Like, would you tell them what you were doing? I'm going to resell your stuff, or was it?
Like, I wouldn't say that. It's like, hey, you know, so I got some stuff you might be interested in. Here's an audio, some radio, it still works. You know, what about this? You know, what about this? I got some grapes. I got grapes.
then after maybe they're like, yeah, maybe I wouldn't want that, right? You know, this is before like insurance for a while, so they didn't really have Amazon. So I'm like an Amazon door-to-door person.
With the wagon.
Yeah. And then I would ask like, hey, is there anything you're looking to get rid of? You know, I could throw away for you or, you know, whatever. You know, people want to throw stuff to the thrift store. So I just took it, put it in my wagon, and just went to the next place and used that to continue to sell.
How did you figure out how to do that? I mean, how did that idea occur to you?
I don't know. I just been selling stuff for a long time. I've been like selling sodas, just making money. It's like things that people want, and just I've never been fearful of people. So I just went out there just to try to maybe it could be maybe perhaps, you know, they used to do fundraisers at schools. You know, hey, do this fundraiser for a school, and you'll get points, and you can, you know, get a certain, like, I don't know, a toy or something like that. Maybe it was something like that. You guys remember those fundraisers? Supposed to sell chocolates or something like that,
yeah,
right?
We did them for baseball.
So maybe I took maybe that idea, I'm thinking, and you're supposed to knock door to door. I was like, well, why can't I do that with regular stuff, right? Why do I have to wait? why do I have to wait for the school to be in session? It's summertime. I have like 3 months. Why don't I continue doing that and just sell anything else? Because, you know, people are very accepting and opening. So I just did that for a long time. And I always had a lot of money. And I think that gave to a great way for like my own liberation, my own way to, I know, be in charge, be in control. And I think that's a great thing for anyone to have in their life.
Yeah, and that's a real form of independence, you know, that a lot of kids that age don't get to experience.
Right.
You know, and some, I mean, I know a lot of parents who are pretty good about you get an allowance for doing things, but that's still not really like your own ingenuity or, you know, entrepreneurial spirit. So that's very cool and fairly unique, I would say, that you figured that out at a young age. So, guys, anything else? Nuggets of wisdom?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's really two really important things that really like kind of guided me and helped me out a lot when I was younger. And there's the realization of nobody really knows anything.
Mm-hmm.
One. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It means you can ask a lot of questions. It means you can ask yourself questions. Why do you do the things you do? What motivates you? And like really think about that. And the second is to have empathy. If you can ask yourself the questions, like why do you do the things you do? And then you're able to put yourself in the position of someone else. And then ask, why would this person do the things that they do? You quickly realize that the way they project their will, the way they project and talk to you and talk to everyone else is a mixture of what it is they want and the pressures they feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And very quickly, for me, at a young age, I realized, oh my God, this thing that I thought was authority or like hierarchy or structures is really just pressures that everyone feels. And if I can empathize with that, I can understand them better.
Yeah.
And if I can understand them better, I can meet them where they're at.
And you also, I mean, one of the side benefits of that is it's also a de-stressor for you, right? Because if you don't have empathy, what often takes its place is resentment and kind of otherizing those people or seeing them as things in your way. And I mean, just think about 8 days ago, I was driving in Los Angeles. It's upsetting. It's an upsetting experience, right? And it's not a lot of empathy available, it doesn't seem, in that situation. Every single one of those people, and just like a, you know, a kind of generalization here, every single one of those people feels that the place they have to get to or the thing they have to do is just as important as I feel like what I'm doing is, right? But if I don't realize that, those people are fucking assholes, you know? And I'm in my car, they can't hear me, I'm in my car swearing at them, and it's only affecting me negatively. And that extends to just like so many different areas of life. If you don't take time to do exactly what you said, to, you know, try to understand what other people's needs and motivations and pressures are, it doesn't affect them. You can't shoot your lack of understanding of them into them with bolts of lightning. You know, it only goes on in your own head and affects you negatively.
What allows you to see, what I realized early on is it allows you to see other options.
Yeah.
It allows you to engage with other people in ways that they didn't expect, because a lot of times, like, it's hard to be empathetic. Like, we're busy about our own, going about our own lives. And when you can meet somebody in that space, you can trigger them to start being thinking outside the box to realize, oh, like, you're not dealing with me like everyone else deals with me. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with me kind of like I'm a person, not just an object.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a philosophical concept of not treating people as a mere end, but that realizing that they're an end unto themselves.
Right. Well, yeah, I think that's valuable. I totally agree with that. And that's something that took a long time, having a lot of these ideas and trying to communicate a lot of these ideas, to learn that if you don't think that way, or if you don't take that into consideration, you're just burning bridges, where you could be moving information across those bridges. But if you don't act with empathy, you're just burning them down and blowing them up. Well, and
I feel like it's very crucial to the idea of liberty.
Yeah.
We want to maximize each other's liberty.
That's it.
Not tear each other down.
Absolutely. It's not, we're not in this, hopefully, to shame other people. We want to make connections that allow us to move information. So, thanks. That's really valuable.
Last word, sir.
I think that's tremendously important. I enjoyed what you had to say about that. I mean, that is the essence of emotional intelligence, and I wouldn't underestimate the importance of EQ skills and soft skills. Anybody, I'm an IT guy, I have an IT company, and in the differentiation that we bring to the marketplace is that. It's not because of the technology. And the entrepreneurial thing, you know, done in hindsight by instinct, maybe. While my friends got a Trans Am, I got a $50 truck and a weed eater. I kept my lifestyle so I could have my freedom, my financial freedom, because as soon as you start buying things that you can't afford, you don't own, you're done.
Very true.
You're done. You're much better off living within whatever, you know, whether you are happy at $1 million or happy at $40, find that place, because that is incredibly important. Because once you lose the freedom, you're done. You can't do shit. And I just don't think that's to be underestimated. And I guess I would also say, me having gone to school the way I did, I didn't have the same thing, obviously. So school is incredibly valuable, incredibly important to me. But, you know, what was interesting for me when I look back at school, everybody else was like highlighting what they needed to pass the test. I highlighted what I didn't know. So I read the whole fucking book. And if I didn't understand a paragraph, that's what I highlighted. And in the IT space, I read the Dreamweaver fucking manual. When I got a blue screen, and I didn't leave that basement until I figured out what that was. And that separated me from, even to this day at 50 years old, having read that library of books that fucking thick, you don't need an institution to educate yourself.
Mm.
You know, I guess is what I'm sort of getting at. And I just think that's really important.
It's interesting that you talk about the value of school, but what you brought to school was a motivation to learn that was yours. And school just happened to be like the first place. You know, so you were still a teenager when you were doing that, right? So at that time, that's the only place all the information was. You know, it was there and it was at the library. So my problem is not with school or courses. It's the compulsory nature of it. And people never realize what it is. What we're really talking about at School Sucks is the school system, the compulsory school system and its intentions. But I worked with, you know, a lot of kids who came from broken homes or bad neighborhoods, and for them, school was a kind of respite. So I understand that it's a lot, and I am very much superimposing my experience onto, like, the whole topic, and I recognize that I do that, which is why I've tried to collect stories from 100 people or so in the last, you know, month. I appreciate you sharing that, and I think that I could understand why that was a positive experience for you, because it seemed like you were really hungry to learn things, right? And that's just like, that was the place where those things were.
I was starved.
Yeah.
It's like I came out of the woods.
But what you came to it with was the ability to teach yourself. And that's the thing that I hope people will develop for themselves. For a lot of people, I think school gets in the way of that because it turns people into intellectual dependence. And there's also a kind of emotional dependency in school where it's like, you know, you're trying to please other people. You're trying to stay out of trouble.
Validation.
What's that?
External validation.
Yep, external validation instead of intrinsic
counsel.
Yeah, instead of intrinsic motivation, which is like what's really interesting about your story. You were so intrinsically motivated to learn that it turns out that this, you know, school, which doesn't do a good job of teaching most people compared to like what the other options are today, was ideal for you. Just because of the desire that you had,
I feel compelled to just give. If I can get another 30 seconds.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I'm just really that empathy piece, because so for me, when I did get to with, I was extremely angry, intense rage, and I found an outlet. I found a positive. Here's the point: positive. I found a positive outlet. And once I found that positive outlet. That's what I did. But I was still extremely stunted emotionally. It's like hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just was down here, man, just, you know. And so, but as I've evolved and my organization has evolved and I need to build culture and all these things, all I'm trying to say is that empathy and gratitude and staying positive is, I think, incredibly important to learn and to stay positive. And I don't mean positive like, you know, cheesy fucking positiveness.
Flowering.
I don't mean that. I just mean like gratitude, like true gratitude. Like I hear the fucking birds in the morning. And I truly appreciate it. And I know people that have tremendous amounts of money that don't have that. And I just wouldn't underestimate that. And when you're in an institution or whatever, and somebody's beating you down with whatever the fuck it is, hear them birds. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a hierarchy of needs. That's self-actualization. Right? I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? And that's independence and...
Indeed. Absolutely.
That's it. I mean, that's
all. Well said. That should be the last word, except for, I want to say thank you to Larry for hosting this. This was awesome. This was
like amazing surroundings. Very cinematic.
It is. It's a cool place. Like, it looks like if somebody was going to have, like, a panel for a documentary... Like, it would be... I feel like I see this on TV all the time. It's like a bunch of people sitting around a table in an empty restaurant or an empty bar. It's perfect. So thank you so much for...
Do you remember Gorge George on public broadcasting 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
No, I don't remember that.
That's all I'm thinking of. Curious George?
Gorgeous George. That's the character. Never mind.
From the movie Snatch.
Nah.
But yeah, thanks again. I really appreciate you putting this together fairly short notice. I think we only started talking about this a week ago. So, and thank you guys so much for coming and for everything that you shared with, you know, strangers or friends. This was awesome. Country roads, take me home to the place. Take me.